Welcome to the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the MLB Trade Rumors Podcast. My name is Dar McDonald, and I want to give a big shout out to Mark Polishuk because I have been on the restricted list for a couple weeks, but Mark was recalled and made a couple spot starts, ate some bulk innings, and did a fantastic job. So thank you so much for that. We'll have to have you back on as a guest soon, Mark, because you did a great job. But with me this week is my MLB Trade Rumors colleague, Anthony Franco. How you doing, Anthony?
I'm good, Dara. How was your couple weeks off?
It was great. I was in Spain and the weather was fantastic. And then I came back to Toronto and it was raining and miserable. And the Blue Jays had been eliminated from the playoffs. So quite a whirlwind for me. But yes, the playoffs are going on. The wild card series are done. It is division series time. Lots going on. But as the games play out, it is currently Tuesday, October the 10th, as we record this. So don't want to talk too much about specific stuff with who's in, who's out, scores in the series, because it might change by the time you listen to this. Turning to the news on MLB trade rumors, we had a weird one this week. It seemed like, you know, the Mets had hired David Stearns, which wasn't terribly surprising because it had been talked about for years. New president of baseball operations, and it seemed like he was going to work with Billy Epler as his general manager. Is that a sort of a transitionary thing at the very least? Because Epler's been there a couple of years, you know, sort of have a bit of continuity in the front office. But now Epler is gone in strange circumstances. This was surprising, was it not, Anthony?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it had seemed as though Epler was going to stay on as the number two there. That had been kind of the plan. I mean, going back at least a few months, it was publicly known that, hey, they're going to hire a president of baseball operations. It'll probably be David Stearns, and Epler is going to stay on as GM as that person's top assistant. And then he steps down, and it was just like, oh, well, that's kind of weird, odd situation. And then within a couple hours, the New York Post reports that there was some sort of league investigation going into potential mishandling of the injured list, which is just a very odd thing for one, to hear the league investigate at all, because teams kind of, I don't want to say manipulate the injury list, but essentially that all the time, where it's just like, okay, we have this player who we need a roster spot, and this guy's kind of banged up. Players are always kind of banged up, and we can send this guy off for a couple of weeks because he was unlikely to pitch anyways, or this guy was going to be out for 45 days. We'll just put him on a 60-day injury list to free a 40-man roster spot. And so it's a thing that the league kind of just accepts as everyone does it. And so it's odd to hear of an investigation at all, and it's even stranger to hear of it being a potential factor in a GM stepping down. There's not a ton of detail about what exactly is going on yet, and you know, Epler stepping aside would not have been super unsurprising if they hadn't already said kind of the entire way along that, okay, he was going to stay. And so it is just kind of weird to, in a difficult situation, to sort of read into what exactly is going on.
Yeah, I mean, the common parlance for these situations is like phantom IL is what people always say. You know, I think even there was somebody this year, I want to say Noah Syndergaard, and you can tell me if this rings a bell for you at all, but he went on the injured list at one point, and I think he used like finger quotes to describe his injury. He was like, oh yeah, I have neck soreness or whatever. Like, it just seems like this is a very regular thing where, like you said, guys are banged up all the time. No one's ever like 100% healthy. Everyone always has a blister or a sore shoulder or whatever. Everybody's sore. And so you can always have some legitimacy around, oh yeah, this guy's going to sit out for 2 weeks because his neck is sore or whatever. So it's hard to figure out exactly what the Mets did that was different than what every other team was doing. And, you know, to what degree, like, do you think of any specific incident where a Met went on the injured list and it was like fishy at all? I can't think of one.
There's nothing that jumps out to me. I was trying to think of even specific players when it first came out. It's like, oh, maybe it was this guy, and just no, I don't know.
So anyway, it's very strange. Hopefully more details will come to light because it seems sort of unprecedented. whether this will lead to any sort of like crackdown, you know, that'll be interesting to see, because if there was something that, you know, I don't know, maybe Major League Baseball thought everybody was just getting too casual with their phantom IL stints. But anyway, Epler is out. So for the Mets, it's yet another, I mean, there always seems to be something with the Mets. I know it's like easy to turn the Mets into a punchline and it's sort of a cheap shot, but there just seems to always be something that's just kind of going wrong, even when things are going right. But anyway, hopefully not a big deal in the long run, and that, you know, Stearns can, you know, have things in good hands. But it's a very strange, unprecedented situation, and we'll see what happens. Turning elsewhere in the division, the Marlins, it was good for a minute. You know, they made the playoffs this year for the first time in a full season in 20 years, so that was very exciting for them. But then it didn't last very long. They were eliminated from the playoffs in two games. And then they got this sad news that Sandy Alcantara needs Tommy John surgery, so he's going to be out for all of next season. So how are things looking after a very brief moment of positivity? How are things looking for the Marlins, do you think, Anthony?
I mean, I don't think that they're in dire straits. Obviously, it's not good, right, to lose Alcantara. But if, as far as teams that can afford to lose a starting pitcher go, Miami's not number one, but they're up sort of near the top. I mean, you still have Jesus Luzardo and Braxton Garrett and Eury Pérez is a very strong top three going into next year. Trevor Rogers is kind of a wild card now because it's been 2 years since he was good, and he missed most of this year with an injury. I think it was to his non-throwing shoulder. And Edward Cabrera throws really hard, strikes a lot of guys out, has very little idea where the ball's going. So, you know, I mean, it's a high risk, kind of a more volatile rotation, I think, than most. And they'll need to add a starting pitcher, sort of, I think, to fill the role that they were hoping Johnny Cueto would fill last year, where you just bring in some sort of stable veteran who you can count on to give you 100, 150 innings of decent back of the rotation production that Cueto didn't really provide. But, you know, they can try again as somebody to play that role. You know, I think that the rotation will still be good regardless of losing Alcantara. Obviously, again, it's never good news to lose the defending Cy Young winner. That's my hot take. But I think they'll be okay. It's just a matter of who they bring in to fill those innings.
You're right that they still have some ingredients there. But I guess the issue, there's also domino effects here in the sense that, you know, we've been hearing for the past few years, because they have all this pitching, that they're going to use the pitching to get some hitting, which we saw them do last year. They traded Pablo Lopez to get Luis Arraez. And, you know, if Alcantara was in there, maybe they could have done that again. But now it seems like, you know, it's a little bit less likely that they can make that kind of trade. As you mentioned, they probably have to bring in pitching more than they are in a position to trade pitching. And, you know, they might lose. It seems quite likely, actually, that Jorge Soler is going to opt out and subtract a potent bat from their lineup. So, you know, do you think they have avenues to add some offense now that the pitching situation is less of a clear surplus?
Well, they could go back into free agency for a bat. You know, I think Jazz Chisholm was hurt for part of this year. He'll, in theory, be more acclimated to center field and hopefully healthy for all of next year. So you can kind of count on a little bit more out of him next season than they probably got. I forgot to mention Max Meyer when I was running through their rotation options before, but he's a former third overall pick who didn't pitch at all this year because of Tommy John surgery the previous summer. He should be back next year. So, you know, you're right that they went through that pitching surplus very, very quickly. And it's kind of, I think, a lesson for like, oh, the Mariners have a ton of great pitching. Maybe they should trade one for a bat. And that's possible. Or the Tigers, I've thrown out as a team that ostensibly could do that. But Miami is kind of an example of like, even when you have a ton of pitching, it doesn't necessarily last very long. Tampa Bay, I think, is an example of this as well, because these guys get hurt very frequently. But I do think that they'll have enough, both in terms of financial space. And again, I mean, you could sign a starter like they did with Cueto last year, sign a starter and still trade one who is more desirable for a hitter if they really wanted to do that.
Well, despite the disappointing finish, it's still at least an encouraging position for the Marlins to be in, possibly the most encouraging position they have been in 20 years. So We'll see if they can build on that. Maybe take advantage of the fact that the Mets are in a little bit of a transitionary phase, but we'll see. Elsewhere in the National League, more front office news. Mike Hazen got an extension from the Diamondbacks. Not totally shocking, but what were your feelings on this, Anthony?
Happy. I mean, it seems like, first of all, just for him personally, like everyone, it seems like who interacts with Mike Hazen seems to really like him. And obviously his family has been through a lot. And so just to see him rewarded with the extension and, you know, have some stability there, even going forward, you know, he'll probably by the end of this spend more than a decade in Arizona, which is just cool. And I think it was deserved. I mean, they've done well, right? He came in, they were kind of a borderline playoff team. They went for it. They made the playoffs, but didn't get very far. Then they kicked off a rebuild. I don't even think they necessarily rebuilt intentionally, but the team just sort of tanked. And it was clear that they're going to have to bring in young talent and build the farm system back up. And they've done that really well. And within a couple of years, they've gone from one of the worst teams in the majors to on the cusp of the NLCS now at this point. I mean, they're up two games in the Dodgers as of record time. And they have a very good young core. And it's just like the organization is clearly going in the right direction. And so I think it's well deserved for Hazen. And just personally, you're happy to see it.
Yeah, well said. It's been quite a season for the Diamondbacks. They're sort of the flip side of the Marlins, because both of those clubs, after, you know, some rough seasons of late, both of them just squeaked into the playoffs. And the Marlins showed that, you know, the excitement of that can quickly be snuffed out. But the Diamondbacks are also showing that, you know, you get hot at the right time and you can go on a bit of a run. As you mentioned, they're up 2-0 on the Dodgers in the NLDS and maybe headed for the NLCS, but we will see. Exciting times for the Diamondbacks, though, as you said. Seems like not just like a fluke. They have a lot of the young talent that you mentioned, so could be contenders for quite some time. Speaking of long term, Atlanta is obviously in a great position right now. They're like arguably one of the best offenses of all time this year. But looking to the future, there's some rotation question marks. It was announced this week that Kyle Wright is going to miss all of 2024. Shoulder surgery, capsular injury in his shoulder. So how does this affect Atlanta's 2024 rotation, Anthony?
It's a little spotty. I mean, I think Charlie Morton's option, he has a $20 million option next year. I think that's kind of a borderline call for them. It's not even entirely clear if he wants to continue pitching. But I do think that if he does want to come back, they could probably get something done, even if it's, okay, we're going to decline the option, but we'll negotiate a one-year deal at, say, $15 million, something like that. So if they get Morton back, they'll still have Spencer Strider, Max Fried as an elite top two. And then you have Bryce Elder, who kind of tailed off in the second half, but I think he's still going to be a capable back of the rotation starter. But yeah, I mean, I think as far as relative weak points for Atlanta goes, this is probably it. You know, I wouldn't say I'm concerned about them necessarily overall, because they have an elite lineup and they basically signed all of them to contract extensions that run until the 2030s. And so they should still be fine overall, but I think the back of the rotation after losing Wright is the area, especially with Fried being now 1+ year away from free agency, is the area where long term there's just the least amount of stability.
Well, let's quickly pivot to your questions, because we got a question here that just relates to what we were just talking about with the Atlanta rotation, perhaps. We got a question from Kevin, who basically asks what Atlanta is going to do with Vaughn Grissom. As you just mentioned, Anthony, they have a whole bunch of great position players and the rotation is a weakness. So I don't know. Do you think Vaughn Grissom is maybe a solution there?
Yeah, I could see that. He had a really, really good year in AAA, at least offensively. It's tough to tell when a guy's not playing at the major league level how well he handled himself defensively. And that was kind of the question with Grissom to begin with, is that everybody knows he can hit, but the issue is we're not sure if he's a shortstop or if he's a second baseman, or maybe he'll end up having to move to the outfield. And Grissom isn't that weird sort of prospect limbo area where he's no longer technically a prospect. He exhausted that, but he's not really an established major league player either. And so you're not getting public scouting reports anymore because he's not technically a prospect, but at the same time, he's away from the major leagues. And so you're not getting to see him play and getting the public defensive metrics. But offensively, he was awesome again in Gwinnett. He clearly doesn't have anything else to prove there as far as just hitting goes. He walks, he doesn't strike out, runs the base as well, has enough power. And there's not really a clear path to playing time next year either, because Orlando Arcia established himself as an everyday shortstop this year, and he's under contract, and obviously they have Albies at second base. So I do think that, yeah, you could get to a point where it just makes sense for Atlanta to dangle Grissom, maybe you said, for controllable starting pitcher.
It would be an interesting calculus for Atlanta, because obviously you would love to have an excellent shortstop just sitting in the minors as depth in case of an injury. That's a great luxury to have. But at the same time, the middle infield free agent class this winter is really, really weak. You know, there's no, like we saw in other years, you know, Correa and Trey Turner and Dansby Swanson and Javi Baez and all kinds of intriguing options. But, you know, this year's class is headlined by, like, you know, Ahmed Rosario and Whit Merrifield and guys like that. So if they were willing to part with him, they could probably get something pretty decent. All right. So let's get to another question here. We got an audio question here from Spencer.
What's up, MLBTR podcast? This is Spencer listening from Central Pennsylvania, and I have a question about the Phillies. I'm wondering where you guys see Bryce Harper playing next year. The outfield picture gets a little crowded with Castellanos, Schwarber, Rojas, Marsh, and Pache, and it leaves a hole at first base that none of those other guys can fill. So do you think the Phillies make a move at first base, a la Rhys Hoskins on a one-year deal, keep Bryce Harper at first and run it back, or a mystery third option like sign Chapman and move Bohm over to first? Love listening. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
All right, Anthony, what do you think? What's where does Harper fit next year?
You know, it's interesting because you have the Rhys Hoskins thing where he's an impending free agent and he didn't play this year, and he presumably won't play at all, though I guess they've kind of left open the possibility he comes back if they make the World Series because of the ACL tear. I think that he's a realistic candidate to just accept a qualifying offer, Hoskins, just based on the fact that he missed his entire platform year. And it sort of makes sense, I think, for everyone involved. If the Phillies say, hey, look, we'll offer you 1 year, $20 million, come back, reestablish yourself on what could be another championship caliber team, and then try to go back out there in search of a multi-year deal next winter. And so if that happens to be the case where Hoskins accepts the QO, then I think that pushes Harper back to the outfield, and then you get one of Castellanos or Schwarber at DH. If Hoskins declines the QO and signs elsewhere, then I think it's maybe a tougher question. But as of right now, I would lean towards just putting Harper back in the outfield once he can throw again.
Yeah, and I guess another factor is that Harper has been kind of like, not every day, but he has been clogging up the DH spot a lot for the past couple of years because, you know, last year he was unable to throw, and then he was unable to throw for the start of this year as well. And so they've had, you know, Schwarber and Castellanos out there in the outfield a lot. But now, you know, they're using Schwarber in the DH spot a lot. So you could pretty easily fit Harper back out there. I guess the question then becomes how much they care about Christian Pache, who they just, you know, got off waivers. And he's shown some encouraging signs since then, but it's not, I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, you have to move Harper to first base just to make room for somebody like Pache. All right, we got two audio questions in 1 week. I think it's a record. Let me get to this question from Owen.
Hey there, it's Owen from Tallahassee again. So the White Sox were a total mess last year. After basically expectations of a playoff spot, and this year is pretty crucial towards their window, if they even have it anymore. And I just wonder, like, if you're the GM, what's the first move you make in the offseason to help guide this team to the right direction?
Okay, so what do you think, Anthony? If the White Sox are still going for it, where do you start? A lot of holes.
Yeah, there are a ton of areas where you can start. I mean, it's, I guess, where don't you start, really? I mean, when you're looking at, you have Luis Robert, you know, that's center field is all set. And Dylan Cease at the top of the rotation. And that's basically it. As far as guys where I think you're 100% sure that it's locked in. To me, the rotation is the biggest question. Behind Cease, they really have nothing. Mike Clevinger is going to become a free agent, likely by declining his end of a mutual option. And they've been relying on like Touki Toussaint to cover innings right now because, since they traded away Giolito. I mean, Jesse Schultens was getting starts down the stretch, and it was just like, they're going to need to add multiple starting pitchers. The bullpen is questionable, but I think they have so many issues that that's probably the last place to really worry about. The middle infield is not good. Even if you bring back Tim Anderson on the option, you're still looking at needing one middle infield spot in a class that doesn't really have middle infield help, as you alluded to with Grissom. And so I know Tim was big when he was writing the White Sox Outlook on the Whit Merrifield fit. I think that's fine as a potential second baseman. I think they make sense if the Angels trade Brandon Drury or if the Yankees trade Gleyber Torres. So to me, rotation, second base are probably the ones that I think you have to address immediately. And they do have payroll space in the short term to do that. But man, they'll have to make about six or seven additions. And still, I don't know that they'll go into 2024 as legitimate playoff contender.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to see. You need, in addition to the new guys that they need to bring in, they basically need bounce backs / internal improvements from like four or five spots. You need like Tim Anderson to go back to the way he was before. You need Andrew Vaughn to break out. You need Oscar Colas to break out. You need Eloy Jimenez to stay healthy. You know, there's so many things that need to go right. In addition to, like you said, you know, bringing in some starting pitchers and Whit Merrifield or somebody like that. It's rough. There's a lot that needs to go right for them. So good luck to the new general manager there in Chicago. But that's all the time we have for this week's episode of the MLB Trade Rumors podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. There are just a few weeks left in the postseason, and we're ramping up our coverage. We got off-season outlooks. We're working on the top 50. We're working on all kinds of stuff. We're doing chats for all those outlooks. Doing all kinds of stuff to get you ready for the winter ahead. Be sure to check that out, but also sign up for the newsletter to get all the news in your email. And if you sign up for the front office package, you get those ads off the site and you get extra stuff in your email that nobody else gets. Super secret club. It's very exciting and not expensive. So do that, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Remember to visit MLBTradeRumors.com and follow us on Twitter at MLB Trade Rumors.